But we haven't finished with the problems in this verse. What do we do with the Gospel of John having Jesus say, I am the way, the truth, and the life? Remember, I told you that John is not written to be a historical record. Did Jesus really say those words? I have no idea. But that isn't the point. John writes so that we might have life and have it abundantly. So that we might believe. So that Jesus' joy may be in us and our joy may be complete. So that we might experience an inner movement of the heart that changes how we live. So that we might receive a wonderful treasure. What is being offered here is not a propositional statement that we have to believe literally or historically. It is John's way of entering us into the mystery of God, of having us experience the union with God that Jesus knows. I want to explain this assertion by looking at more of the Gospel of John and by making a connection with some basic Quaker experiences. This verse is only one of the I am statements in John. The statements are reminding us of who God is and giving us the experiential connection between Jesus and Yahweh God. When Moses asked God who he is, God says, YHWH, an unpronounceable name, which we have made sound like Yahweh or Jehovah, and which is often translated as, I am who I am, or just, I am. So when we hear Jesus say, I am, there is the automatic connection with that beginning story of faith. And it reminds us who the Father is. This connection is reinforced in other I am statements, such as, I am the bread of life. Remember the manna in the desert? I am the light of the world. I am the good shepherd. You may still be squirming about Jesus' claim uniting or equating himself with God, but look at what I see further on in chapter 14 and chapter 15. In chapter 14, verse 10, Jesus says, do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? And then in chapter 15, verse 4, he says, abide in me as I abide in you. I see here Jesus as human and divine telling us the very same relationship that he has with the Father is available to us. I am in the Father and the Father is in me. Abide in me as I abide in you. This being one with God is more basic than we are likely to have fully comprehended. Now, here's where I want to bring in about being Quaker. And I hope it will help you understand what I've just been reading. Let's think about giving vocal ministry in meaningful worship. We know about that. We friends claim that we are to wait to speak until we are led. So in some ways, the words we speak are not ours, but have been divinely given to us. Occasionally, I've heard a friend explain later, after having spoken in worship, that he or she does not know what was said. The words are that much not their own. It is generally understood that we address an issue in meeting for business until we have a corporate sense of how the Spirit is leading us. And when we make a decision led by the Spirit, there is something special about how we live out that decision. It has a special character that is recognizable, if not definable. Let me continue reading in chapter 14. Do you not believe that I am in the Father, and the Father is in me? The words that I say to you, I do not speak on my own. But the Father who dwells in me does his works. Believe me that I am in the Father, and the Father is in me. But if you do not, then believe me because of the works themselves. Isn't Jesus saying what we friends know in worship and in business meeting and board? The words I say to you, I do not speak on my own. If you can't believe me, then believe, remember that means experience an inner movement of your heart, then believe because of the works that happen when we make decisions attuned to the Spirit. We may have trouble with the language we use to describe what happens, but this oneness is the essence of what draws us to friends. We can listen within. We can be in the Spirit in which the Scriptures were given. Christ is present to speak to our condition. The way and the truth and the life can be known. I do not believe that John 14:6 is claiming that Christianity is superior to any other religious tradition. Nor is he claiming his superiority over the Buddha or Muhammad. The question for us is whether we can give up our fears that those who make exclusive claims for Christianity and for Christ are right. What would it be like if we surrendered our outsider space, our safety from the claims on our lives that Christ makes, and gave ourselves to plumbing the depths and riches of Christianity for what they are? What would happen if we allowed a deeper knowing in our hearts of the way and the truth and the life? What would it mean to know that the light of Christ is within us, that the Spirit dwells in our bodies, that we are able to listen within and know the voice of truth? What would happen in us, in our meetings, in our world?